America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I, of course, am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Elogi. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Yo.
Hello.
Yeah, so this episode is going to be for June 28th, 2019. It's going to be the last show for the month. And this week, well, amongst other things, we did get the first of the Democratic nominee debates. It was had like 20 people. So many they literally had to divide it into two different nights.
Yeah, as opposed to last year where there was like three people.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The thing was last time is that the overall dropout rate was just much more brutal.
Yeah. Well, it was a very one-sided field.
Yeah.
Like, you knew who was there to actually compete, and you knew, and then you had everyone else.
Yeah. And this time, everybody's in it for, well, they're in it, they're out for blood, basically. But amongst other things, you know, that made some news. Especially it showed who may very well end up being the front runners and who basically sputtered out. Mm. I think Beto O'Rourke is like pretty much done now.
Yeah.
Hopefully
he's got time to announce a Senate race after he gets out of the presidential race.
Yeah. But we'll be talking about some of that because some of the people in debate, you know, talked some policy, and we'll be talking about that. Amongst some other things, a columnist for New York Magazine accused President Trump of sexually assaulting her back in the 90s, and he reacted to it about you would think he would.
Yeah, he tweeted.
Yeah. Well, he tweeted and he gave a public comment, which is just pure Trump, but we also found out that Robert Mueller is going to be testifying. Let's see. Oh yeah, and Eric Trump has got spat on by some folks at a Chicago restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Thoughts and prayers.
Yeah. Speaking of thoughts and prayers, actually, you know what? I'm going to let that hang as a little bit of an enigma. You'll have to find out what it relates
and
to.
And here I set the table for you just so well.
Yeah, but I ain't going to let you steal my thunder, so. Yeah. And, you know, some other stuff. We'll be talking about it, including the idea that the Jabberwocky dance crew may not only just be a dance crew, they might end up have the chance to be Summer Olympic athletes. We'll tell you why later on in the show. Oh, yeah, and there's a certain anniversary that we'll be discussing this week. I mean, well, today specifically, but this is going to be kind of for the whole weekend. And I'll be talking about it to you in a little bit. But first and foremost, before we do anything, we must start, as always, with what we've been up to this week. So, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So, first, I started listening to the Pern series.
Yeah.
This was one that, you know, I knew of, but I just never gotten around to actually reading / listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm come to interesting for me to like start listening to this and realize that this is actually a sci-fi series. Yeah, that was kind of strange. So yeah, I wasn't expecting that, but, so like maybe it's 'cause I'm listening to them in like a chronological order instead of release order. But yeah, Dragons and, Planet Exploration. That's a thing that I'm, into, and this combines the two, so that's been mm-hmm. fun. And the only like real bummer about what the one I'm listening to is that the audiobook production is not so good. There are better versions available. I'm gonna see if I can like track one of those down, but the one I got's like a rip from a cassette from 1993, and it's like I think like parts of it are missing. So yeah, this might be. Might be one to get another copy of. But, so, yeah, I'm listening to that. And besides that, I'm still going through the X-Pass. I've got, like, the last season finale to finish now. So, yeah, can't wait to do that probably after the show. And, of course, Bloodstained, which has kind of been most of what I've been playing and doing. Yeah. there is a lot to that game. Yeah, and I love, like, the little references that are scattered throughout the game to, like, other stuff that he's done.
Or like, just other things that exist in general.
Yeah.
Like Shovel Knight.
Yeah.
Shovel Knight's in there.
Yeah, he's in there.
He's a regular enemy.
Yeah.
He sucks because he's really strong.
Yeah, but yeah, you get it. You can beat him and get his shard, so that's one thing.
Yeah.
You can also unlock his armor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a thing. Alucard. Yeah, he's in there. He's called OD in this one.
Yeah.
They
don't call him Alucard, but it's Alucard.
Yeah, it's totally Alucard. he's in there. You can actually fight him.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to. The requirements to actually do that are excessive, but worth it once you actually manage to beat him, because he's nasty as a boss. Well, Simon Belmont is in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that. As I was expecting to actually get the right ending for the game, you've got to do a lot of shit.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, the game already kind of hints already that there's going to be a second castle in there.
There isn't. There isn't.
There isn't?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. The whole thing about stuff being upside down, that's an ability you get.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah. So, it's like...
Now suddenly everything makes sense.
Yeah.
Because,
Yeah. So, yeah, there's that. There's, like, you know, the Aegis plate armor, which will, like, basically lets you walk through spikes without being damaged, and that becomes important to actually get the good ending, because you can't do it otherwise, because there's a particular item that you need, and it's across a pit of spikes you can't access any other way. Yeah, it's a really, really good game.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll fight Zangetsu again. That's kind of a... That's not really a spoiler, because he, like, kind of intimates that he's, like, really not happy with you. So,
existing.
Kind of.
Yeah, kind of a lot. So,
he's pissed.
Yeah, he's kind of pissed. Yeah. He has issues, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's an amazing game. The more that I play it, the more I love it. And I think, I do want to get through that OD fight because the library mechanic in that game where, you know, you could just borrow a book and you get, like, a stat boost?
Mm-hmm.
Well, beating OD allows you to take all of the books simultaneously.
Mm. So then the game just kind of beats itself.
Yeah, but you have to have a complete save to do it, for one thing.
Yeah.
And second, to even fight OD, you need 99% map coverage, at least.
Yeah.
So, Jesus. Yeah. It's going to be... It's fun. The one thing I do like, well, like in the sense that it shows you where exits are. Remember that big blood fountain?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's important.
I figured it would be.
Yeah.
Especially considering there's, like, a hole in the middle of it that you apparently can go down.
Yeah, because it shows it on the maps, like, huh. Yeah. So, yeah.
What exactly is that thing that got its head cut off that's had all of the blood going into the fountain?
I don't know.
Is that, like, a reference from, like, the other game?
Don't know. I would, part of me thinks it's a reference to a Konami executive, but... So, who knows? So, that's kind of been it for me. How about you, Pat?
Well, I've been playing plenty of Bloodstained myself, but not nearly as much as you have, because I've had other things going on as well, one of which is Samurai Showdown, which dominated my gaming time pretty well until this morning.
Hmm.
I'll have a lot to say about that game on Sunday, as well as Final Fantasy XIV Shadowbringers, which I am playing right now.
Hmm.
And holy shit, I'm only a couple of hours into it, and it's a lot to digest already. This expansion, they've straight up said, is the culmination of several, of pretty much every storyline that started since 1.0. And so they're going to be tying up a lot of loose ends here and really setting the table for the vision of Final Fantasy XIV that is exclusively Naoki Yoshida's. Because there's still a lot going on that is left over from the original team. And they're going to be tying a bow on all that. And so it's gotten to the point where Yoshida himself actually said, it seemed, I think a lot of people might play the storyline getting a lot of anxiety that the game as a whole is wrapping up. Don't feel that way. There's a lot more to come, but we are tying up loose ends. So, yeah, that's... obviously, I haven't played much of it yet because I went to work today, but I will have a lot more to say on Sunday.
Okay. All right, Chris, what about you?
Yeah, so I've been watching Evangelion.
Yeah.
I'm on episode 13 right now.
Yep.
Basically after the big episode where one of the angels becomes a computer hacker, essentially.
Yep.
Tries to hack into their systems, and the whole weird thing is that they've governed their whole society by... these three AIs that kind of are able to debate whatever topic, and yep. they vote on it and majority rules.
Yep.
So you manage to hack into one and gets almost all the way to hacking the second to cause a self-destruct sequence. And then they've, you know, barely survive and overturn it by hacking into one of the AI's brains. Which is a weird thing. And so far, the show's been pretty good. But
told ya.
Only in the first half. I know things go off the deep end.
Oh, yeah.
At some point.
Oh, you are...
You have no
that's
idea.
Underselling it.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen this show before. I just was in a different... That was like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. So I'm kind of curious how it holds up and... There's definitely lots of tits and ass that they
yeah,
shove in your face.
But again,
constantly.
It's early 90s anime, so that's kind of par for the
yeah.
course.
Keep in mind that back then. Misato is emphatic that the term is fan service.
Yeah. 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 It's important to remember that back then that was considered to be a liberatory practice.
Like, yeah.
Like, okay, like a good example, it's kind of further back, but you guys ever heard of Vampirella?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you've seen Vampirella. So Vampirella was designed by Trina Robbins, who is obviously a woman comic book artist, and she specifically designed Vampirella to look all that stripperific because, you know, it was the late 60s, and that was, you know, considered to be empowering, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of the way that they viewed it in Evangelion.
Yeah.
It's a cultural thing. Times have kind of moved... In a weird direction since
especially
then.
Especially when one of the characters they try to titillate is a teenage girl.
Oh, well, Asuka. That's just Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Japan. It's like, you know, she's not even of age. Like,
at least, in Japan she would be.
Yeah, but also when you're trying to sell it across the Pacific, you know.
Yeah, it's true.
And also, she is just the angriest person.
Yeah.
Oh, God, are you talking about
she
Asuka?
Has issues.
Yeah.
Yep.
She is constantly, like, there's a sequence where she's like, where the power goes out. So she is like, I'm the boss here. What do you think we should do? And, what's his name? Is like, well, I don't know. She's like, shut up. I'm the boss. Let's go. I'm like, yeah. What the hell are you yelling about?
This is Asuka the redhead you're talking about, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I haven't gotten that far ahead yet. Does she still throw in the random German?
On occasion.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah,
I think it was a lot more gratuitous in the old dub, though. But
yeah, and there are some points where, since I'm using the English subtitles, which are for the Japanese dub, it's occasionally things where they're more gratuitous in the Japanese dub than the English dub. Nothing really over the top, but it's like, oh, they just didn't say this swear that's in the Japanese dub, I guess.
Yeah.
Little weird stuff like that. But yeah, she's a very angry person.
Oh, yeah. There's no a reason.
Yeah. At least so far they haven't
she has really a reason.
Displayed any reason.
Oh, they
she's
will.
Yeah.
It's right later now. On in the series, but yeah, they do.
Yeah. She's just constantly yelling at Shinji and all this. It's like, what? Jesus Christ. Shut up. Shut up. Nobody
to be fair, I agree with you.
Yeah. certain point, it's like, shut up. Nobody, you're not that important. There's two other people like you that can do the job if you are too arrogant.
Actually better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's been all right. Yeah. See, I've been playing more Rocket League, completing the challenges for this week, which are mostly not too bad. I've just been getting onto teams that have not been great. Because one of the challenges I had is just get 3 wins. I just got that today. We even had a match where we were up 3-1, mostly because of me getting 2 goals, and we lost 6-3. Because teammates just kept not, like, kept deciding not to cover the goal as much as they should. Just gave up easy goals, and it's like, at a certain point, I just stopped playing as hard, because it's like, it doesn't really fucking matter, the team's giving this up, sort of thing. But, yeah, the only one I got left is get 90,000 XP, which I'm about, like, 40,000, so still got a bit more time, and I've been doing more streaming. I finally figured out a way to get my game feed to my left monitor here and just have everything else on the right monitor, which involves some unsightly HDMI cables being strewn across my setup. I'll have to order some longer ones to help make that a bit easier, but yeah, I have it essentially, the left monitor is going through my HDMI switch, which when watching Evangelion, for whatever reason, every time it switches to the next episode, it flips off the left monitor. It's a weird thing. I don't know if it's just maybe the HDMI cable is weird and it's tripping some HDCP thing or what, but yeah, it's been a little weird. So I have to like flip the HDMI switch on that output to something else and then back to the PC monitor, and it fixes itself. But then there's a whole weird thing when I'm trying to stream where if I switch it, the left monitor, to one of my consoles, it tries to put everything on the monitor that just got switched off because it deigns that to be the default monitor. So I have to go in to the settings ahead of time and set the right monitor as the solo monitor, not to turn off the dual display at that point, which fixes all those issues. It's just a little bit weird stuff I gotta just keep in mind when I'm trying to set up other things. So, but yeah, played some Crash Team Racing on Sunday, which was pretty fun. Played some multiplayer as well. And that multiplayer is a bit lackluster in terms of the features there. So there's no like skill system. So you just get matched with anybody. So there are a lot of matches were just trying to finish the race before you redeem DNF. So I think after the first person finishes, you get about 30 seconds to get across the finish line, which when they know what the fuck they're doing, they can get through there pretty quick. And it also seems to have a problem refilling the lobbies. So after people start leaving, it doesn't get full again. So it's kind of, you get to a point where you're just like, oh, well, I'm just going to quit out and start it back up. Get a new lobby in here, that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's real weird. I think if they want that game to be kind of the staple multiplayer kart racing game they want it to be, they should definitely be pumping that part of the game up and add some more features to it. But as is, it's a pretty fun game. I don't know that I'm going to play too much more online multiplayer because I like to actually have a shot at winning. I was usually trying not to be last. That was my goal.
Putting today's team on blast here.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was like my goal every race, just don't be last. And I found out like at a certain point, they just throw AIs into there. I think if you're below four below, they just start throwing AIs, which, all right, now there's probably 2 or 3 people that know what they're doing, plus AIs that certainly know what they're doing. That certainly made it a bit tougher. But, yeah, that game... it's a lot of fun. I still don't quite have drifting down yet because there's very specific timing for getting the boost out of it, and I wasn't getting it. Either the tips in the game itself are not telling me the right thing, or I'm just misunderstanding the whole thing. Because it's like you have to wait for the black smoke to come out of the pipes, and I thought I kept doing that, but I'm not able to get it consistently, so I'm missing something. But on Tuesday, we played Hitman 2, which has the new map they just released in New York, which is set in a bank, like a big rich person bank, essentially, where it's just huge environments, lots of security. And the whole story behind this bank is that there's some big dudes at Providence who's like the rival intelligence agency that you're kind of been facing off against in the first two seasons. One of the guys is about to get their identity changed to kind of disappear. And this bank is like the last link to them. And they haven't necessarily wiped their servers or confirmed the changes through their servers just yet. So you need to infiltrate and either – it has two kind of main goals. You're either trying to get the data disk out of the vault underground that is super under lock and key, or you take out three key figures that have their own backup that's like a third of the backup split across these three people, which they don't highlight two of them. One of them is also sort of the last link between Providence and the bank, and so you need to take her out regardless. So you get like one third of it just by doing that main goal, but the other one is just to find these other two people or get through the vault. And I kind of stumbled around enough. I ended up killing enough people that I was able to go through the vault without too much trouble. Got that and just got out of a bank truck nearby and did it pretty well. But that was like an hour's worth of stumbling around. And gotten to a certain point where I found a room that was in like a hell dimension. Because I looked at one door and there was nothing on the other side. There's like the emptiness of the game world under there. And like I went on the other side and you could see inside and it was the same thing. It's like, all right, this is the hell dimension. And I shut the door. And I came back a few minutes later and it seemed like that hell dimension had gone away. Because the room was as is, as normal. And after I beat that, I played the two new scenarios they put in there, which are kind of they take the original maps and kind of give you a new like main objective, or they change up the whole thing for some special thing. But these two scenarios were just new bad guy, and both of them were pretty easy. I beat the first one in 90 seconds because he's right near the start of the stage, the basic starting point, and I had an explosive stashed away right nearby. I got it. I threw it over there as I was walking away, just exploded it and got away pretty easily. It was like 90 seconds. Pretty fast. The second one was in Santa Fortuna. The first one's in Mumbai. And the second one is kind of this dude that's on the other side of this bridge at the starting area. And you're going to have to take him out and get his black book. It has a bunch of names in it. And I managed to – well, I threw an explosive in his way, apparently missed it when it exploded. So I hid in the bushes, and he came running by and just stuck him with a knife, took his clothes and ran away until everything died down a bit, and then managed to sneak in and get his book that was hidden in another part of that area. So that wasn't too bad. And I think the last one I played, the new sniper map that they added – one of the recent updates. But since I just recently got the expansion pass, I not had a chance to check out what all was new with that. But yeah, that was a lot of fun, and I'm definitely going to put some more time into that because they added a lot of new stuff with that expansion pass. The weird thing is they added a new trophy list just for that new map, or like for the expansion, that'll have like all the extra trophies in there. So I think they probably hit a limit for the original game because it has, I think, five trophy sections for each of the new levels in that Hitman 2, plus the six from the original game, and plus like a main one for general Hitman 2 stuff. So it's like they must have hit a limit for trophies and just created a new one, which seems like, hey, Pinball Arcade, you should have done that. Because I think at a certain point, Pinball Arcade hit a limit and just stopped putting trophies in their tables, which is a bad way to get people to buy them. And yesterday we streamed Musedash, which is on Switch and Steam. It's basically a Japanese music anime rhythm game. It's $3 on Steam, $30 on Switch. The extra money is because they put out an update called Just As Planned that adds like 70 new songs to it. It's $30 on the Steam as well. I just had the base version that I got a code for. And it's essentially like a two-lane rhythm game. You are kind of side-scrolling with your character. You hit a face button for the lower lane. Hit one of the face, the direction buttons for the top screen, the top lane. And you kind of just mash them to go with the music. It's kind of not too complicated. There's some commands for holding it down for what they call sheets. There are some for holding both at once. And they have three difficulties for most of the stages. The early ones just have two. There's like easy, medium, and then there's master, which I did some masters, and that game gets pretty hard. Once it starts just throwing tons of notes all over the place, and you have to really pay attention. Which is why that stream did not go as long as some of the other ones, because at a certain point, my mind just turned to mush. It's not able to keep up with the music and the beats at a certain point. And it is anime as hell, because there's different skins for characters, and they very much are about tits and ass. Lots of bouncing, at least when the character selects green. Mm-hmm. They like to shake them around, for as much as it's like, eh, this is kind of creepy. But yeah, that was pretty fun. And yeah, lots of good music in there. Kind of stuff that I would not be surprised if some of that stuff is used for like anime openings. A couple songs definitely seem like stuff that's inspired like Ruby's music, that sort of stuff. And yeah, I might be streaming tomorrow. I think I'm going to just probably stream some Rocket League because I'm going to be working late and won't probably have a ton of time to set up anything too fancy. So I'll probably just be playing some of the Radical Summer stuff and show off the Ghostbusters-inspired mode that they have in there. And that's going to be fun, especially trying to get the rest of this XP that I need to get for the last challenge and unlock some more stuff. And, yeah, not sure what we're going to do for Sunday, but I'll figure it out. And that's been kind of it. It's fucking hot as hell here. Mm. It's in the upper 80s every day.
Mm.
That kind of weather that just you're instantly coated in sweat as you get outside, and then your energy just gets sapped away.
Yep.
No matter how much water you drink to stay hydrated.
Mm-hmm. All right. My turn?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So, as for me, yeah, I finished the Ace Attorney trilogy. And now I'm just waiting for them to bring the Apollo Justice series to so I can basically continue that whole story. But until then, I got some other stuff to anticipate, such as, you know, Fire Emblem Three Houses, which will be out and about in the world about around this time next month, I believe. But for now, we've got, of course, Bloodstained Ritual of the Night, which I'm guessing pretty much everybody is playing right about now.
Almost.
Because when was the Kickstarter for that thing launched?
2015,
yeah. So it's been 4 years.
Yeah.
Which, let's be perfectly honest, that used to be par for the course with games like this.
Yeah.
When we were kids. So. But, yeah, so, you know, the first of all, when I first started playing it, I was like, man, this is really, really Symphony of the Night-esque. And I mean, by saying that, I meant it seemed to draw so much from it that it almost seemed like a Symphony of the Night clone. But after a little while, it definitely becomes its own game pretty quickly. Whole new ways of playing, you know, mechanics. That shard mechanic in particular, I gotta admit, on the one hand, it's definitely cool, but Okay, so I've only been able to play it for a couple nights now. I gotta ask, is it true that if you have too many shards on you, it'll actually have a negative effect on your character?
Technically, yes.
Or is that just a red herring?
Well, I think it's a narrative red herring, because one of the things that, except that she can become completely corrupted. One of her outfits is totally corrupted.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not sure how many shards the threshold is there for that. But it's like, you know, having multiples of the same shard actually makes it more powerful. So,
yeah,
you kind of run it, have to decide what you want to do there.
Yeah. But I will say, you know, like having like a familiar is definitely a lot of fun. And I've noticed those familiars, depending on how you play the game and what you're doing, it'll actually interact with things when you're fighting and when you're not fighting. So, like, for example, you know, the Garden of Silence. It's the one with the piano out in the middle under the rotunda or whatever.
Yeah.
Apparently, you know, if you sit down at it, you know, and you wait a little bit, obviously Miriam will actually start playing it.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, depending on what familiar you have at any time, the familiar will actually start singing along. So,
yeah, the fairy familiar will.
Yeah.
I've seen it with that one so far. I haven't seen it with anyone else yet.
I'm actually just at the point where I'm fixing to go into the train. But first I have to go to the library and meet up with OD in order to, you know, I got to like get the double jump ability and then get whatever it is that you have to get that lets you go through the turnstile. So, I've been told that boss on that train, that apparently has a bit of a jump scare.
Leave you to find that one out.
Oh, I already know where it is. but yeah, that game is a lot of fun. It is definitely still haven't found much use for guns yet, though. Like I know the firearms are like one of the weapons you can have, but to be honest, the close quarter weapons I've found to be far more effective. But yeah, that's just.
Yeah, so some bosses, the firearms will help for. Like when you're fighting the dragons, having ranged attacks actually kind of helps because, you know, fire breath kind of thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, other than that, God, the game really is just a lot of fun. It is legit. I found it legitimately difficult to turn the machine off when I needed to go to sleep because.
Yes.
Also, Miriam is just a really cool character in her own right. So.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah. I'm guessing you've met Lindsay, who.
Yep.
Just wants you to murder everything.
Kill those murderers dead. Yeah, I know. And she gives you rewards for it. And there's the old lady with the bottomless stomach.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's basically what I've been playing for the last couple nights. I'll let you know what I think when I get further in. I will say, though, some of the animations are a bit stiff and robotic when you look at them a little too closely. Mm. I mean, honestly, that doesn't really bother me that much, but it is noticeable.
Version did you get?
PS4.
Okay.
So,
yeah,
I didn't get the Switch one.
Yeah.
I was already warned ahead of time about that one.
Yeah. They said they're still working on it. There's some stuff that, some rough edges that they have noticed now that they want to fix. So.
Yeah. But, game's good. Definitely go out and play it.
Mm.
Buy a copy. Because it is
imagine
a lot of.
If the Wii U version had got let out of its cage.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. That would have been a travesty.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, Netflix, obviously, yeah, I am watching Evangelion. I definitely prefer this, dub over the old one, but then that's kind of like saying I prefer chocolate over dog shit. And, you know, Shinji doesn't come off as much as a whiny little bitch as he does with the other dub. So that's a positive, I guess.
It's what Spike Spencer brought to the character, but I don't know.
But, yeah. So, yeah, it's good. And then for music, really, I say really gotten into him recently. I've always been kind of a fan, but I really got back into him at least. A group called Spock's Beard. It's an old school style prog rock band originally from the early 90s. When I say prog rock, I don't mean like Dream Theater, you know, or Queensryche or anything like that. No, I mean like Genesis and Pink Floyd and King Crimson, like the really old school style prog rock. And it is really damn good too. That first album alone has like only three songs in it, and every one of them is worth listening to its completion. But there is like a distinct kind of division about Spock's Beard. There's the Neil Morse era of Spock's Beard and the post Neil Morse era of Spock's Beard. Cause, sometime around, I think it was 1998, 1999, Neil Morse became a born again Christian, and he went off and did a solo career and did a bunch of praise music. He still does like prog rock stuff now. He just doesn't really do it with Spock's Beard anymore. And it's not that Neil Morse is like a bad guy or hard to work with or anything. It's just that he's one of those guys who's like so unbelievably insanely talented of a musician that he kind of drowns out everyone else around him. So much so that, you know, he kind of ends up dominating whatever band he's in. That's definitely what the case was with Spock's Beard. But you know, he has like solo music too. You know, he's got, and then of course he's got another bar called the Neil Morse Band, which is proggy. Real good shit. Other band I really gotten into is Primus. And once you get into there's no going back, is there?
Yeah.
It will suck you down with it.
Welcome to peak bass.
Yeah. Yeah, but Primus is the kind of band that makes you rethink how rock and roll works, like, completely. Because Primus is basically shows you that the whole, like, the dynamic of drum and guitar and bass can be turned completely on its head and reworked in such a way that it can become something completely different. Because in most rock and roll, in most rock bands, you know, the dominant instrument is a six-string guitar, and then the bass and the drums are just the rhythm section, right? Yeah. In fact, what's the famous joke is that the one guy in the bass, none of the groupies want, no one guy in the band, no one in the, no groupie wants to sleep with is the bass player.
Yeah,
that's not the case with Primus, because Primus is all bass all the time. Les Claypool somehow managed to take the bass guitar and turn it into the dominant instrument in his music. So much so that you sometimes forget that, no, there is guitar there. It's just a lot more in the background. Also, he's the only bass player I know of who's actually attached a whammy bar to his instrument. But God damn, it's good shit. It really is. Also, I love how, like, their old music videos are basically, like, their sole purpose is to make you feel as uncomfortable as possible. especially the one they did for Jerry Was a Race Car Driver, which has that whole beginning with the dude getting nachos from the shirtless guy behind the nacho stand. And there's, like, really, like, long hold on him stirring the cheese and licking his lips and shit. And it's, you can hear the goopies, like, goodness of the, yeah. Still doesn't compare to fucking Wynonna's Big Brown Beaver. That's like, God, how do you describe that one? Kind of funny and also kind of nightmare fuel.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that compares to that is Mr. Crinkle, and that's because he's wearing the pig suit, but whatever. Anyway, Primus is great shit. And once you get into Primus, it pretty much turns every other music into... You won't listen to music the same way again after Primus. And other than that, the world is made out of... I'm getting really tired of, you know, going out of my door and getting melted by all the fucking lava that's in the air. Because it's going to get up to around 100 this week, and I'm not happy about it.
Enjoy.
The sun sucks.
Yeah.
Did you see how hot it is in France?
Yeah, it got up to around 120.
Yeah, I think 113 in Paris.
Yeah.
Was there, like, record?
Yeah, that's ever? A historic record.
Huh. 100 and... Wow, in France.
Paris.
That doesn't usually happen.
No, it does. Yeah.
They're fairly north up in Europe.
Gee, I wonder what the reason could be.
Yeah.
It's all those damn immigrants.
Yeah, it's the Democrats.
Yeah. But at least this guy, you know, folks, for us folks here in the South can look over to France and go, pussies. But, yeah.
In other news, Korn has a new album coming out.
I did not know they were still around.
Yeah.
God, I haven't listened to them since, like, 2000.
Yeah, just found this out. So, okay, I'm going to have to explore that in a bit.
So, wait, is Hetty back with them? Because, like, didn't he, like, fucking become, like a crazy born-again Christian dude and leave the band?
I have no idea.
That's a nut story for another day. Anyway, all right, so... that's it for what we've been up to. You guys got anything else before we move on?
No, I'm good.
All right. So, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And today, June 28th, 2019, was the 50th anniversary of a very, very major event in the world. Do you guys know what it is?
The Stonewall Riots.
That's right. 50 years ago was the Stonewall Riots, which is pretty much considered by most Americans and pretty much the world the beginning of the modern gay rights movement. So you're thinking, okay, called Stonewall Riots, and it was a riot. And I don't mean that in the fun way. I mean that in people were so pissed off they started turning over cars way. And for good reason, too. Basically, what you need to know is... unlike today, it kind of sucked to be gay back in the 60s. You know, if you weren't in the hippie scene. And even then, it could be kind of hit or miss. So, pretty much ever since the early 20th century, there had been various, you know, what they used to call homophile groups that had popped up over time in the U.S. to try and prove that, you know, the gay community could assimilate into regular, you know, bourgeois American society, and they wanted to just, you know, favors like regular education and stuff like that. It's like, here's stuff, we're not so bad. It sort of kind of worked a little bit during World War II, and then the 50s rolled about and all of that just kind of collapsed on itself. So basically, by the time 1960 had rolled around, pretty much everybody had been driven back into the closet. Unless you were like a big-time Hollywood director or a playwright or, you know, a writer like Truman Capote or something. You were basically forced to exist on the fringes. And, I mean, it was particularly bad back in the 60s, especially, because Stonewall, which, for those who don't know, Stonewall is located in Manhattan. It's in Greenwich Village. And back in the 1960s, it was actually illegal to stand of the same gender as you were in a recreational facility. Like, it could actually get you dragged off to jail and find out the law. So... on top of that, most of the places, you know, any kind of gatherings where the gay community would meet up for whatever reason would regularly get raided by police. And when I mean regularly raided by police, I meant it was actually like routine shit. A lot of these places developed like codes and signal lights and shit to let everyone know, like, yo, police are coming. Stop the gay shit for 5 seconds. And that's kind of what happened at the Stonewall. So June 28th, 1969 Stonewall. It was, trying to figure out what the Pacific time was. It was right around, the police riot. It was 1:20 a.m. on Saturday, June 28th. And what happened was, Stonewall, which like a lot of gay friendly or gay, establishments at the time, was partly owned and funded by the mafia, because unfortunately, when you can't do something this completely, when something this like harmless and completely, by modern standards, absolutely harmless and completely regular, is considered absolutely illegal and beneath any human dignity, pretty much organized crime ends up filling the void. It was the same with Stonewall. It was the same with like all the gay bathhouses in New York and over in San Francisco. Parks and recreational facilities like that all over the country. Basically, most of them would be have some sort of funding from organized crime. Stonewall was no different. And that because the fact that its ownership had mafia ties, it meant that it would basically give the New York City Police Department carte blanche to basically go in there and fuck with as many people as they possibly could. And so that's kind of – this was another one of those routine raids that happened. At 1:20 a.m. Saturday, June 28th, the owner of the Stonewall Inn had flipped a light switch that they used as a signal to all the people in Stonewall to – because they had gotten word ahead of time that there's a possibility that the fuzz may be on their way. Try and, hate to use this phrase, act normal for a little bit. But instead what happened is a few policemen, four of them were plain clothes and dark suits, two were patrolling uniform, and two higher ups, Detective Charles Smith and Deputy Inspector Seymour Pine, basically kicked in the double doors and announced, "Police, we're taking the place." So, yeah, they start going in. They basically start asking questions. They start cuffing people. Now, keep in mind the kind of people that were in Stonewall when this was happening. So, obviously, you had the regular gay community. You also had drag queens, the transgender individuals, butch lesbians, effeminate young men, male prostitutes. And as was often the case for a lot of places like this in New York at the time, homeless kids, because unfortunately, if you were homeless at the time or just in general poor, these places were kind of your only refuge. So you see all this shit happening. They wheel out the paddy wagon. They start going in. Started interviewing everybody. They started slapping off the cuffs. They started kicking and punching some of the regulars. The music was turned off. The lights were turned on. And so this is just to tell you, this is what they have written in Wikipedia. Okay, so the raid did not go as planned. Standard procedure was to line up the patrons, check their ID, and have female police officers take customers dressed as women to the bathroom to verify their gender, upon which any men dressed as women would be arrested. For those you don't know, cross-dressing at the time in New York was illegal. But what happened, and this is where the tipping point is, the women, the drag queens and the transgender men there, who were the first to start getting all that shit done, they decided, you know what? Fuck you people. We're not going back there. Basically, as it says in Wikipedia, those dressed as women that night refused to go with the officers. Men in line began to refuse to produce their identification. The police decided to take everyone present to the police station. And that was their mistake. Because as that happened, you know, just overall, people started to realize, holy, yeah, just apparently once the scope of the situation got started to dawn on everybody present, basically everyone started to realize, well, everyone except the cops started to realize how fucked up of a situation this was at the time. Because you got to remember, if this had happened then, it would have been like a big news story, and there would have been news photographers taking pictures of people there. And keep in mind, back then, anonymity was everything to the gay community back then. Because if you were spotted in that, you know, you could lose your job, you could lose, you know, your security clearance if you worked for the government, you could be thrown in prison, all this shit. So basically what then happened was there was a dispute over the alcohol. So yeah, Stonewall Inn was, of course, a gay bar, and what does every bar have? It has liquor. And apparently there was some kind of dispute over whether the liquor license that the people at Stonewall had was legit or not. So they wheeled in the patrol wagons and they started lining up all the alcohol. And so basically what they did is, because the beer and shit was going to get loaded up to the wagons, but the wagons weren't going to be there for another 15 minutes or another like 20 minutes or whatever. So basically they made all the patrons of Stonewall line up against the walls there. And generally, this is generally considered when it all started. It's maybe it was just the fact that it was June, it was humid, everybody was pissed off, some people were drunk probably, and others just in general were just really sick of having to deal with this crap from the NYPD. By that point, about 150 people had started showing up. And then what happened was some of the street kids, and there's a photograph of this. I can find it. Yeah, here it is. This is a photograph from here on, that's on Wikipedia. This is when the first signs start showing that shit's going down. The street kids started confronting the kid, started confronting police officers. You can see one of the plainclothes officers right there pushing some of the kids back. And then nobody's really sure who did it. It was one of the either one of the drag queens or one of the transgender people. One of them, generally, sometimes it's either Sylvia Rivera, who's generally credited with doing it. Somebody took off their stiletto high heels and threw it at a window. It could have been a shop window. It could have been a window on one of the police cars. Nobody knows. But somebody picked up the high heels, the stiletto, and they threw it at a window. And the window shattered. And all hell broke loose. Because for the first time in American history, all of these people, some of whom weren't even part of the gay community, they were just homeless young people who didn't have anywhere else to go, had been, you know, been harassed and beaten around by these NYPD thugs and their moral squad assholes for too long, and then it started. They started wheeling in the tactical police, the riot squad showed up, they were throwing bricks, cars got turned over, the whole thing lasted well into the next night. It didn't end until June 29th, and it was an awakening. You know, these kinds of events, there are very few times in history where you can specifically link the start of a movement or something to a specific event. And a Stonewall is, because you have to also remember, it wasn't just the gay community that got drawn into this. It was pretty much all Greenwich Village got sucked into it. There's another fairly famous photograph. All right, so like here's another one. This is also from Wikipedia. It's the sort of like the store window that goes into Stonewall Inn. And I'm going to see if I put it in here in the chat. Yeah, there it is. You'll notice there's something written on it. It says, "We homosexuals plead with our people to please help maintain peaceful and quiet conduct on the streets of the village." Mattachine. So Mattachine, that's the Mattachine Society. They were like one of the quote-unquote respectable homophile organizations at the time. And because of that, because of this event, the modern gay rights movement as we know of it, where it was no longer about trying to sort of assimilate into like respectable bourgeois society. It was no longer that. It had become something where, look, this is just who I am and fuck you. You know, you're not going to restrict who I am and how I live my life based on these bullshit concepts that you impose. Pretty much immediately after that is when you started getting organizations popping up like the Gay Liberation Front, the Gay Activist Alliance. The following year was what's known as the Christopher Street Liberation Day. And that's when the first gay pride parade happened. Now, of course, you know, these days, of course, we have Modern Pride Month, which has become heavily corporatized and has sort of become like, I think the term they use is rainbow capitalism. That wasn't what it was like when it started out. It was very much a part of the late 60s, early 70s radicalism, you know, and the new left and all of that. So it's a good thing to remind people, you know, when there's a time now when, yeah, you know, gay rights have definitely progressed very much, but at the same time, it's also kind of gotten assimilated into the corporate structure. And quote unquote respectability, and to remind people that this all started because one pissed off drag queen threw her high heel through a window. It was a riot, an actual honest to God riot. And sometimes the riot is what you have to do. And that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid.
All right.
So with that out of the way, it's now time to go on to the show proper, and as always, we have to start off with our asshole of the week. Ooh. Our asshole of the week is the state of Alabama. Okay, so back last year, there was a woman who was pregnant who was having a fight with this other woman. And the other woman got really pissed off and shot the other woman in the stomach. Unfortunately, now, the pregnant woman survived, but her unborn child did not. So, and I was like, okay, that's fine. Well, the person who's shot, they got arrested and were charged and are in prison, right? And like, this woman's getting restitution or something. No, because of how screwed up Alabama's laws are. Woman who, with the gun, was doing the shooting is off scot-free, and the pregnant woman who had her unborn child taken from her, is now charged and in jail.
Because somehow this makes sense.
Well, the way the DA made it, saying it's like the only victim in the whole thing was the unborn child.
Yeah, and I think the way they're trying to frame it is that she initiated this conflict.
And my, and you know, of course, my response to that is, who the hell cares?
It's like she didn't force somebody to shoot her. Like, that's not a reasonable reaction to a woman doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when people talk about, like, oh, she's being harassed because she said this. Like, nobody deserves to be harassed for any reason.
Yeah.
Like, nobody deserves to be shot for any reason. Like, that's fucking shitty asshole doctrine right there. It's like, you say shit, get shot.
Yeah. So this was in what city was this in?
I think Fairfield is what it says. Course.
Yeah, it's in Fairfield. All right.
Yeah.
So it's yeah. Yeah, so basically, okay. Marsha Jones, she's 27. She was indicted by Jefferson County grand jury on a manslaughter charge. She did not fire the shots that killed her unborn baby girl, like we said earlier. Authorities say she initiated the dispute that led to the gunfire. Police initially charged 23-year-old Ebony Jemison, that's the woman with the gun, manslaughter, but the charge against Jemison was dismissed.
Some would say maybe the gun killed him. Killed the baby. I don't know.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, when it comes to matters of deciding manslaughter, you know, the thing with a weapon is a weapon has to be, unless somebody dropped the gun and the gun just went off, there'd be some ambiguity there. But we have somebody who clearly pointed the gun at someone and then pulled the trigger with an intent to shoot them.
Something died.
Yeah.
They want to argue that the baby has personhood, even though it doesn't exist yet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because Alabama has those personhood laws.
You know, this is them saying that baby's more important than the mother.
Yeah.
And the person shooting the gun is not as important as the person that it said words.
Yeah, so let's see.
See, it wasn't the bullet that killed the baby, it was the words.
What, the actual crucified fuck?
Yeah.
I wonder if they would put that on the coroner's certificate for this thing. It's like, baby died at, 8 p.m., dead of words.
All right. There, Pleasant Grove Police Lieutenant Danny Reed said at the time of the shooting, the investigation showed that the only true victim in this was the unborn baby. It was the mother of the child who initiated and continued the fight, which resulted in the death of her own unborn. But,
the person that got shot is not the victim.
I mean, you know what a bullet wound does to the human body, right? Like, even a superficial one.
Pregnancy is not – doesn't go well.
Yeah.
Like, a forced miscarriage is probably not a picnic in the park.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it's through non-biological means.
Reed said the fight stemmed over the unborn baby's father. The investigation showed, he said, that it was Jones who initiated and pressed the fight, which ultimately caused Jemison to defend herself and unfortunately caused the death of the baby. Did this woman, charge at her with a knife or something? Or because you don't usually get a gun involved unless another person may have a gun or a deadly weapon.
You're just a nutty gun rights person.
I don't think that's the case here.
But people that carry around guns.
Yeah, that's true. Let's not lose sight that the unborn baby is the victim here, Reed said. She had no choice in being brought unnecessarily into a fight where she was relying on her mother for protection.
Ugh. Yeah, when you care more about...
There's also a degree of condescending here that...
Oh, yeah, it's controlling women.
Yeah.
If she didn't say anything, her baby'd still be alive.
Yeah. New... And, the thing is, it's the grand jury. Now, grand jury, isn't that like a state prosecutor's office or something like that?
I don't know.
Let me check.
But in Alabama, it could be like a bear in a shack.
Yeah.
Something weird.
A grand jury is a jury group of citizens empowered by law who conduct legal proceedings and investigate potential criminal conduct. So were these regular civilians?
Yeah.
Might be.
Apparently, yeah.
Because I don't know if my dad was in a grand jury because he had to go to Cleveland once a month for some jury-related reason. I don't know if that was a grand jury or what. But that would make me think it's that sort of thing. You're on that kind of fucked up hook for jury duty. Mm-hmm. Whereas you fucked up at some point to have to do this serious shit.
Mm-hmm. So, wow, Alabama's even more screwed up than I thought it was then. So these are just regular folks.
Well, if you get a bunch of people that are evangelicals.
Yeah.
Which is not hard to find in Alabama.
Yeah. And that's not a disqualifying thing to be evangelical.
That's just...
But literally the shooter getting, dismissed off of this is the fucked up part.
Yeah. It's
mm-hmm.
I would say miscarriage of justice, but actually, no, that's exactly what this was.
Yeah,
just a miscarriage.
Ugh. Yeah.
And they're holding on $50,000 bond. Mm-hmm. Like she is a threat to do anything.
Seriously.
Yeah. You know, I think Alabama is definitely in the running for asshole of the year at this point.
Yeah.
They've appeared in this segment like 3 or 4 times so far.
And we're barely halfway through the year.
By the way, if you do click on that link we got provided in the show notes, don't read the comment section.
Oh, 937 comments. I'm sure they're all saying, oh, that sucks for her.
It's about as bad as you can imagine it is. There's a moral crisis in this country, and it ain't the bullshit one of the evangelical shit's names keep telling us it is. But anyway, all right, so hero of the week, to sort of wipe that bad taste out of our mouths, because I'm pretty sure I threw up in my mouth a little bit after reading all
unpleasant.
That.
Unpleasant. Totally did.
Ugh. It's former president of the United States, Jimmy Carter. Now, Jimmy Carter, of course, is from my state. He, of course, most people know before he became governor, he was a peanut farmer.
Mm-hmm.
Which
he divested of when he became president because he thought it might be a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
Yeah, those peanut lobbyists. Mm-hmm. They're most powerful people in Washington.
Yeah. And he was like the... I guess... Does Arkansas count as the South?
Yeah,
I would say so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Arkansas would be the disputed South, I would think.
South-ish.
Okay, so...
Would Kentucky South-ish. Be the South?
It depends on one part of Kentucky.
All right. If we annex Cincinnati, we give that to the South.
Yeah.
Because they're basically...
Okay, so let me put it this way. Jimmy Carter was the last true Southern Democrat to be elected to the office of president. Because after that, the Southern strategy really kicked in. And the parties basically permanently switched their allegiances, and that's why the Solid South is now red. But yeah, so of course everybody knows Jimmy Carter, he only served one term in office. He was basically you could sort of say that he was kind of a victim of the kind of increasing political relevance of the religious right.
Mm-hmm.
Which should show you how extremely hypocritical he is, because this guy's a Sunday school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, the guy that followed him was an actor from California.
Yeah. He probably deserves a good bit of credit for the end of the Iran hostage crisis, even though it's mostly given to Reagan, because him and his administration did most of the legwork. You know, ever since he left, he hasn't been presidency. He's basically made his – oh, yeah, he's also the guy who got the – what was it? The Camp David Accord signed and got the alliance between Israel and Egypt.
Yeah.
He's basically the guy – after he left office, he basically made his reputation as a humanitarian. He started Habitat for Humanity. He pretty much destroyed the guinea worm. It is pretty much almost non-existent now, thanks to the work him and his foundation did. He's done a lot to give, you know, to help poverty in the third world and in the United States as well. I've done some volunteer stuff back when I was a teenager for Habitat for Humanity. You know, it's good work, definitely worth doing. He's also kind of become a sort of elder statesman / voice of reason.
Yeah.
And this week, he was asked about, because it was announced of course this week, and we're going to get to it a little later, that Robert Mueller is actually going to testify before the House.
Yes.
And he was asked about that, and he said, well, I think that if they investigate deep enough and close enough, they'll find that Russia directly interfered with our election and that Donald Trump is not a legitimate president.
That there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah. So that asks like, okay, so what is he? Because he didn't really elaborate more than that. But it's
he just basically said that he lost the election. He was put into office because the Russians interfered on his behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And the dude who was interviewing him basically asked him, so do you think Trump is an illegitimate president? Carter paused.
And he said yes.
He said, based on what I just said, which I can't retract, let it speak for itself.
Yeah. For the record, Jimmy Carter is like 97 now, so he doesn't really give a crap anymore.
Yeah.
No, he's basically dedicated.
94. He's 94. He's at a point now. He's like, look at me. I'm going to die probably tomorrow. I don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah, he's kind of just focused on his charity work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, July is going to be an interesting month.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
wouldn't it be like crazy if after these entire 4 years of Trump being president that he ends up being erased from the history books as a legitimate president?
You mean like that what they did to Benedict Arnold after the revolution?
Yeah.
Where they took down all the statues and erased his name, or like what Stalin did to Trotsky?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or what they did to what in ancient Egypt they did to Akhenaten.
Hmm.
They tried to destroy all of his statues.
Hmm.
Yeah, that will be I would not be surprised if something like that. Well, I would say that, but we still have Andrew Jackson on our currency.
Yeah, it is that.
So
valid.
Yeah. And at this point, I'm not sure how much help Russia is going to be, because if you've been paying attention, Putin has his own problems over there right now.
Oh, yeah. We should talk about Putin has kind of lost the support among the people. Part of the reason he's managed to skirt by as long as he had over the last 10 years is that despite loving or hating him, the dude was really popular.
Hmm.
Not so much now these days. No. He is starting to lose the popular mandate.
Hmm.
And I don't think any amount of polonium tea is going to be able to solve that little issue.
No, there's that.
But anyway. All right, so now it is time for the proper show proper. And first we start off with the story that, let's see, what is her name? Columnist for the New York Magazine, Miss E. Jean Carroll, came forward. Was it this week or last week?
This was last Friday.
Last Friday, so it was kind of on the cusp of when we ended the show last Friday. She came forward and she said, "Okay, so way back in the late '90s, I was in a what was she? Was she like in a? She was in a department store.
Yeah, what was it?" Bergdorf Goodman.
One of those kind of places. she basically said 23 years ago, Donald Trump assaulted me in the Bergdorf Goodman in the dressing room. Wait, what the hell was he doing in the dress? Why am I even asking myself these questions? Of course he was in the dressing room.
It says Trump sought her advice in buying a gift and the two had met previously. She claims that while gift shopping, Trump pressured her to try on lingerie, grabbed her arm to pull her toward the dressing room. She says the moment the dressing room door is closed, he lunges at me, pushed me against the wall, hit my head quite badly, and puts his mouth against my lips. I'm so shocked I shove him back, and he starts laughing again. He seizes both my arms and pushes me up against the wall a second time, and as I become aware of how large he is, he holds me against the wall with his shoulder and jams his hand under my coat dress and pulls down my tights. And yeah,
so this is right out of his playbook.
Yeah. So I mean, if it is true, nobody is actually surprised.
No,
this would be like the 23rd allegation of sexual assault he's had against him.
Yeah. Something like that.
And it says a lot.
Don't they call that like the Bill Cosby rule? Like once you're past 15, there's usually a sign that something's going on there.
Yeah. And we might have to rename it at this point.
Yeah. Like is 17 strikes and you're out?
Yeah.
And kind of the weird thing is that this really hasn't gained any traction.
Yeah, it got kind of... That's actually... You're right about that. Because, I mean, obviously it was kind of sort of out in the ether. But...
It was only, like, there for, like, half a day or so.
Yeah, in fact, I think it was the New York Times. Didn't they actually, like, push the story all the way to the book section? Mm. Or was it the Post? I can't remember which one it was.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, when you release a story on a Friday evening, it's because you want to bury it.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, that little bit of info there, but
and I think it was actually like the story was like specifically taken from the issue from I think the Post and a couple of other papers. Mm. Specifically for that reason.
Yeah. Well, if it's the Post, not many people give that publication much credit.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, she let's see. Yeah, Trump obviously denied it, says she doesn't know who she is. You know, there are pictures of them being together.
Yeah, and then he said, first of all, she's not my type. Like, dude, just... God.
It's like, yeah. Could you possibly make it any worse?
I think there was even a point where Trump Jr. was... I guess there's a Law & Order episode that kind of has a similar plot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they're like, well, she obviously stole it from this. And I think they even have her response on this. It might have been a different article, but she was basically like, huh, yeah, that is kind of close, but no, this happened in the 90s. And she even had two of her friends who spoke up saying, yeah, she told us about this right after it happened.
Now, I want to ask this. Was this, like, did she originally put this out as part of her column, or was this like a public statement she gave at like a press
this
conference?
This is in like a book she's working on.
Oh, okay. Because the reason I'm asking is because like there's kind of like is there like a time difference between when she wrote it and when it was actually printed?
Yeah, she's detailing allegations in her forthcoming book. What Do We Need Men For? A Modest Proposal.
Ah,
which are public. Yeah, excerpts of which were published early Friday.
Yeah,
in New York Magazine.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
She doesn't name Trump in the printed excerpt of the first person account. He is named in the headline. It reads, Hideous men Donald Trump assaulted me in a Bergdorf Goodman dressing room 23 years ago. But he's not alone on the list of awful men in my life.
All right. Well, we're going to see where that goes. I guess the reason why, other than the fact that there may have been a handful of people that were actively trying to suppress the story, it might have also been that she's kind of had the misfortune of this coming out right around the cusp of the Democratic debates.
Yeah.
And when the campaign...
I think it's also just people in general like, yeah, he's raped women. You know, the way that there's so many awful things he's done,
mm-hmm.
Not one of them holds up as like major news anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Which is,
yeah. and that's a sad state of affairs that we're in.
Yeah,
yeah. The 16th rape—that's awful. But let's wait for the 17th to see really what's going on here.
Yeah. Well. Anyway, next story. As everybody knows, we've got a serious moral and humanitarian crisis on our southern border. People fleeing from Honduras, El Salvador. Fleeing civil wars and cartel violence. A lot of it we kind of sort of have a hand in starting.
Mm-hmm.
Have been fleeing north. Most of them end up settling in Mexico, which is a fact that I have to constantly bring up because, you know, ever since they brought up that whole terrifying image of the caravan, they give this like this incorrect notion of just like a wall of humanity pressing itself up against the border like it's a pane of glass or something. But no, most of them have settled in Mexico. But Mexico has also turned down a lot of these people and have actually, like, at gunpoint, turned them away from the border. The ones that have gotten as this far are the people who are really, really desperate And I have to also remind people, if you want to declare asylum in the United States, you are legally required to set foot on American soil, which is where sort of some of this issue is, because the United States government has one or two, I think it's two or three places that are declared as like port of entry for asylum seekers. I'm not exactly sure on that. The people who talk about this stuff make it or have their facts so screwed up and vague that I'm honestly not entirely sure which is which. But basically, in order to declare asylum, you have to be on American soil first. Also, according to the Geneva Conventions, if you are fleeing violence, any country that is adhering to the Geneva Conventions has to allow you to get into the country. Now, I don't know if the United States adheres to that particular protocol or not, or at least gives lip service.
They did at one
point. Yeah. Basically, what has happened now is that it may not have been intended, though I would also say there's a very good argument that that was also the point. We now have concentration camps on our border. I mean, there is no other way to say it. They may not have been intended to be that. They may have just been a temporary solution that got way out of hand and was overwhelmed.
That's probably giving it too much credit.
Yeah, I know, but I'm also trying my absolute best to be fair here. Because when serious shit like this comes in, I want to be able to get all the facts out there so that everyone can make a good, educated decision. But the fact that it doesn't matter either way, though, because the fact of the matter is, that's what they are now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, I would argue that there's a good case to be made that that was, in fact, their intentions, that they were specifically trying to make them as unpalatable and inhumane as possible as a deterrent. Which not only goes against just basic human decency and morality, but also against international law. We are talking about people not having soap, not having toothbrushes, not having blankets, not having any toothpaste or clean potable water or medicine. The sanitation is so bad that the children have been the victim of a lice and influenza outbreaks.
Yep.
Yep.
There have now been six children documented that have died in American U.S. custody since this whole thing went into effect. And this week, a spokesperson for the Trump administration went towards a bunch of judges and argued that those aren't required for the children.
Yeah, because there's the safe and sanitary clause.
Yeah.
Or this whole thing, and they're trying to argue. Let's see, I don't know if they have a quote here. But the judges have their heads on rights, saying this is Judge Marsha Berzon.
Yeah.
You're really going to stand up and tell us that being able to sleep isn't a question of safe and sanitary conditions?
And see, the thing is, you can watch the footage and watch these judges get increasingly more and more horrified as the realization dawns on them.
Yeah, there's Judge William Fletcher who's like, are you arguing seriously that you do not read the agreement as requiring you to do anything other than what I just described? Cold all night long, lights on all night long, sleeping on concrete, you've got an aluminum foil blanket. Fletcher asked, I find that inconceivable that the government would say that is safe and sanitary. Also, there's a nice twist here. I don't know if you're going to see it coming. Let's see. What's the other judge's name? Judge A. Wallace Tashima, who was a child during World War II.
And had to spend time in one of the internment
camps. Americans.
You know, one of the same camps that George Takei had to spend his childhood in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as he says here, it's within everybody's common understanding that if you don't have a toothbrush, if you don't have soap, if you don't have a blanket, it's not safe and sanitary. Would everybody agree to that? Do you agree to that?
And she really tried the absolute best she could to not answer the question.
Yeah. Yeah, the Peter Shea class counsel going against this. Let's see. The first thing you do is honor the plain meaning of words like safe and sanitary. Today we have a situation where once a month a child is dying in federal custody. Certainly the Border Patrol facilities are secure, but they're not safe and they're not sanitary. Okay, he's arguing for this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. On rebuttal, Fabian said the administration plans to file a motion for reconsideration with G upon a favorable ruling from the panel, eliciting a portentous reply from Burson. Have you considered whether you might go back and consider whether you really want to continue this appeal? There doesn't seem to be a whole lot left of it, considering that life has so moved on now, she added, and noted that a government regulation codifying and extinguishing FLORAs is in the works. I just feel like we're litigating ancient history at this point, Brisson said. All three panelists were appointed by Bill Clinton. They did not indicate when they would rule.
I sure hope that whoever that woman is, that she's made peace with her god or whatever deity she believes in. Because on the off chance he may or may not exist, I'm gonna think that he's probably not too happy right about now with what you've been doing.
Yeah, because there are plenty of Bible verses about accepting strangers into your home and helping them out.
Yeah,
yeah. That's large chunks of it,
and that shit goes all the way back to the Old Testament and further. So.
I guess the only like real good part about this is just seeing the look of utter disdain on the faces of the panelists.
Well, first there is the growing sense of horror as they suddenly, as the extent of all of this, not just the extent of all of this, but that this woman is willing to go before them and defend all of it like it's somehow okay.
Yeah.
And just realize the absolute depth of human moral depravity that has found itself in this administration. And then just the utter disgust they have afterwards.
And basically just flat out saying, yeah, your days there are numbered.
Yeah.
So.
Like, really, you're wasting our time with this?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. And I want to remind people, at most, Donald Trump at most has only until 2024. And that's if he even lasts to 2021.
Mm.
Or hell, if he even lasts to 2020. But
he'd have to get reelected.
None of these, for some reason, none of these people seem to realize that. It's like, you know, he's not going to be president forever.
Yeah.
And once he's gone, every single one of you people are going to be held accountable for this.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you were a bystander or not. We are going to drag your ass to court, and you will be prosecuted.
Hmm. Yeah. Now we're going to spend another 8 years trying to fix the shit that broke in 4 years.
Yeah. Anyway, in more political news, the Supreme Court ruled this week that political gerrymandering. We have that problem here in the U.S. because a lot of the districts can decide their own districts and how they're located, where they're measured, et cetera, et cetera. And pretty much ever since then, they found ways to manipulate the district maps so that they can have a favorable outcome to them.
Hmm.
So whatever party might be in power at any given time. And the Supreme Court ruled this week that is not a domain for federal courts. It is for the state courts.
So the people doing the gerrymandering are going to decide whether they're okay or not.
Whether
that
does not seem like it makes a whole lot of sense.
No, it doesn't. It's actually kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
This is very much the kind of illegal way that Mitch McConnell's refused to have Supreme Court hearings at the end of Barack Obama's term.
Yeah.
Coming back to full terms with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey,
it's mostly the reason this happened is because the Republican Party, as we know of it today, is on death's door.
Mm-hmm.
In about 20 years, the demographics are going to be solidly against them. And they will probably end up going the same way as the Whig Party.
And it seems like the only recourse we can have here at this point is that Congress comes together to
decide. Well, Congress does that, laws. And also the states can actually start getting involved now and have legislation that can, because, you know, we've already now have gotten a couple of states that have specifically redone their districting law so that you can no longer do this, and they've got third parties to help draw them now.
Yeah. Like we've done that here in Ohio.
Yeah.
But this also means that basically if a state repeals this kind of gerrymandering law and, you know, basically makes that illegal, there's no higher power that's going to look at it.
No.
So there is that.
Yeah. But you can also do the opposite as well.
Yeah.
So
you can entrench it.
It's
as well.
A trade-off, but there is a solution to this. It's just takes a little bit more work. So the Supreme Court, on another decision they did on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, said that vulgar trademarks are cool. So a company called Fucked can now have its trademark.
Yeah, the weird thing is that it's not really pronounced Fucked.
Yeah.
It stands for Friends You Can't Trust.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to say F-U-C-T.
No, they know full well exactly what this was going to be.
Yeah. This was sort of, the name was come up around the time that, like, FUBU and that sort of stuff was coming out in the 90s. So they struck down a provision of federal law that prohibits registration of immoral or scandalous trademarks as a violation of the First Amendment. Which, all right, people start getting your curse words trademarked.
Yeah. Now you can trademark.
Yay!
The Sony Fuck Station.
Hooray!
Oh, your sex box.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is so. I love this shit.
Yeah, this comes. I think this is kind of along the same lines as that decision for the slants. So, yeah. It's a good decision.
Yeah. Hmm. So it wasn't all bad for the Supreme Court this week.
Swings and roundabouts.
Yeah. Anyway, next up, we had the, of course, the debates this week, the Democratic primary debates. 20 people, which is actually less than it was originally. I think they knocked out like 7 other people before.
Yeah, they had to meet some specific criteria.
All of the candidates came forward and announced, you know, their various plans, you know, to help encourage people to vote for them in the primaries. And Senator Bernie Sanders came forward and unveiled his College for All plan, which, amongst other things, is going to cancel all student loan debt in the United States.
Yeah, $1.6 trillion of undergraduate and graduate debt for about 45 million people. No eligibility limitations will be paid for with a new tax on Wall Street speculation.
Nice.
Yeah, which goes further than the plan that Elizabeth Warren had. Still, both are pretty good plans either way.
Yeah. I'd prefer the Sanders one, but if I have to go with the Warren one, I'd be satisfied.
Yeah.
And the great thing is there was somebody's like on Twitter that's some like a Republican dude. I was basically saying, oh, if they actually win, they're going to and do this, he's going to set his town on fire because he just paid his off. And he just kept reiterating it over and over again. I'm just going to nuke this town.
Yeah.
And so he's like, I hope they actually win just so we can have this loser get so butthurt by this. Yeah. Yeah, so, like, there's obviously huge reasons to do this because a lot of people our age are under crushing debt because you're kind of expected to do this if you have plans to go to college.
Yeah, basically the costs and the price for trying to pay for those costs have spiraled wildly out of control.
Mm. And it's basically just banks trying to take advantage of millions of kids.
And, of course, independent debt collectors, who are the absolute scum of the earth.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That's another subject to talk about.
Not to mention, like, some certain quote-unquote educational establishments that charge way too much and end up with degrees that aren't actually worth anything.
Like Trump University.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Or even just regular degrees.
Hmm. Yeah.
It's like when we had the whole economic downturn about 10 years ago. That created a situation where there were far fewer jobs for college graduates than there were people that had degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically devalued tons of degrees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So people had to work like regular jobs that did not require degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now there's lots of jobs that require ridiculous degrees for stuff that doesn't need it.
Yep.
It's lots of bullshit out there because companies want that perfect candidate that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So like if they have these high quality, graduate degrees and whatever, it's like they don't want your $15 an hour fucking job.
Mm-hmm. No, they want a robot. That's what they want.
Yeah. I was like, they put out an ad for robots.
Mm-hmm.
They'll probably be able to reply to them pretty soon.
I think they probably already can.
Yeah, it'll be those the scam bots. Mm. They'll figure it out because you just put your resume on any site like that, that'll put it out there.
Oh, God, yeah.
You immediately get picked up. Immediately, like, you doxed yourself free of charge. Like,
I get, like, 3 or 4 of those a month now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to keep throwing them into the spam bucket.
Yeah.
So, goddamn, learn it. This goes here.
Mm-hmm.
It's home now.
Yeah. But, of course, bunch of other stuff happened for the debates this week, but that's pretty much going to be kind of the
extent. It's kind of too early to really.
Yeah.
It's just like half of these people are not going to be here in a few months.
Yeah. And hopefully Joe Biden will be one of them.
Yes. Oh, snap. Yeah, I like the good bit that the one guy has, like, yeah, when I was a kid, we had a politician come and talk to us about how they're going to pass the torch to the next generation to.
And that was then Senator Joe Biden
in the debate with the guy who was receptive of that speech.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like, he's like, oh, I still have the torch. It's like, then you were lying, you fucking asshole.
All right. Just all I will say as far as the debates are concerned, one, Beto O'Rourke is probably going to drop out pretty soon because he got his ass handed to him.
Yeah. And he's Kamala, probably more valuable to run for a Senate. Some of these guys will.
Kamala Harris basically shot up into the top tier by basically turning to Joe Biden and saying, go fuck yourself, old man.
Yeah, that makes sense.
She came for human entrails.
Yeah.
It's like her and Elizabeth Warren shot up big time.
Mm. Yeah. So we'll see where it goes from there. Anyway. So.
We got a year and a half. We don't need to fucking obsess about this debate.
Oh, they still will.
Oh, it cannot get here soon enough. Seriously.
God, they asked Joe Biden about fucking busing in the 60s. It's like, what the fuck? This is how old this fucking idiot is.
Yeah, and he was actively fighting against it, too, might I add.
Yeah.
Because he was palling around with old
guess school. Who was one of the kids involved in the busing?
Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
She was Jesus the second Christ, generation. Might be like
he is too old for this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
when people who are, the victims of his legislation or just the people affected by it.
Yeah.
Are fucking in the debates.
Are old enough that they can qualify for president of the United States. And remember, to qualify to be president of the United States, amongst other things, you have to be around 35 years old.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Lots to cover here. Lots to go.
Yeah. Next up. You know that wall funding bill that people have been tossing around for the last couple months?
Yeah.
It got sort of, it managed very not magnanimously get passed through the House, and the progressives in the House of Representatives are not happy about it, and it's mostly because Pelosi caved.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, not really any changes were made.
Nope.
And see, passed 305 to 102. I imagine it's probably mostly Democrats on the nay side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime Trump is happy on this sort of stuff is not good for the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because people had, specific ideas for, hey, we should get more in here as far as, like, addressing the shit that's going on with ICE at the border.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, try and divert the money that way instead of the stupid fucking wall. It's not going to do anything.
Yeah.
And yeah, like the moderates essentially won here.
Oh, that stupid fucking wall.
Yeah. And it's seems like Nancy Pelosi's time as Speaker of the House is probably not as long as it seemed like it was going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially once this election comes about, I have a feeling it's going to shake things up a bit.
Yeah.
But, we got more for the House coming up this fall?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. And next up, on July 17th, which is, let's see,
3 weeks away.
3 weeks.
2 or 3 weeks away. Robert Mueller will testify before the House of Representatives with some conditions.
Yeah, the conditions, let's see, there's 2 open sessions with Mueller, 2 closed sessions with the staff.
Mm-hmm.
The House Judiciary Committee will have to choose which of its members are able to ask Mueller questions during its open session. Let's see, the Judiciary Committee is quite large, almost double in size, only 22 of its 41 members will be able to ask questions during the open session. Details of the agreement between the committees and Mueller's office are still being worked out.
Mm-hmm.
Could still change. Judiciary committee members who do not get to ask questions of Mueller will be able to attend a closed session with Mueller's staff following the open testimony. They'll be able to ask about materials redacted from the public eye. And each member of the Intelligence Committee will ask Mueller questions for 5 minutes in the open session before following up in a similar closed session.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so this I was going to look for something onerous and or something here, but this just seems like provisions to keep it from turning into a complete clusterfuck.
Yeah, because there's a handful of people on the House Judiciary Committee that would like it to turn into a complete clusterfuck.
Then if you give 41 members 5 minutes.
Yeah, you're going to be there for a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's quite a while.
Yeah.
That's going to be... that's going to be great.
Maybe like 3.5 hours, maybe 4.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
So 22, it's like 2.5 maybe.
Yeah.
Don't forget the 5 minute for responses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So next up, for some of you who don't know, but Sarah Huckabee Sanders has stepped down as press secretary.
Like today's her last day?
Yeah. And to that I say, bye, Felicia. But we now know who's going to be taking her place. It's going to be Melania Trump's communication director, Stephanie Grisham.
Okay. Not really much to say there.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like, that's a face, all right.
And she's basically one of the very few people that are still around in the White House that was part of Trump's election group.
Yeah.
And she's done a good job making people not think about Melania for the last 3 years.
Yeah. That's funny. But yeah, more or less, I mean, after that, I don't care to you jacket shit. She's kind of ducked under a rock and no one's really paid attention to her since.
I mean, literally, she's disappeared for days. Nobody knew
if
she was actually gone or there's conspiracies about there being
Melania.
A clone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. So next up, next story. Over in the state of Maine, there is a representative, Susan Collins, who is supposed to be one of the quote unquote moderates of the Republican Party.
Yes,
really all that
representative.
Yeah, but really all that really means is that she has no goddamn spine and will roll over whenever she thinks the winds are in her favor. Well, Maine's House Speaker for the state of Maine, Sarah Gideon, is actually going to be running against her in 2020. And hopefully she will win.
Yep. Yeah, I think she said that her highlights for criticism is going to be Collins' vote for the GOP tax overhaul. The video includes footage of Donald Trump thanking Collins. The last thing Gideon mentioned is Collins' vote for Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh.
Mm-hmm.
Probably in the sort of thing of caring about women's rights.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she served in the state legislature since 2012. Her announcement video, she recounts how her husband was asked to run for town council, but she decided it was a job she wanted to do. She ran for that office and won.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a bunch of Gideon's videos about her tenure in public office. She holds up a picture of the former governor for too long. Paul LePage tried to stand in the way of getting things done in Maine. Gideon says in a video boasting how she brought lawmakers from both parties together to override a veto from LePage. Yeah, it seems like she has a pretty good shot.
Mm-hmm.
Maine is very much Democratic states, though for whatever reason they've elected Paul LePage
for governor, and we don't mean that rhetorically. We mean we're pretty sure there is something genuinely wrong with him.
Yeah. He constantly spouted racist stuff and then had to come back like minutes later. But yeah, I didn't really mean that.
Somehow managed to keep getting reelected.
Mm. Yeah. So. It's like, you know, if you guys don't want this kind of person representing you, stop voting for him.
Yeah.
Don't be like, I've heard of that name before. I'll vote for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that's kind of what it boiled down to.
Yeah, I think that's probably most people voting. It's like, well, that's the incumbent. I've heard of them.
Yeah.
I'll vote for them.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I would remind people that that is the state where the majority of Stephen King's novels take place.
Yeah.
It's also Canada Junior.
Yeah, that's a
no.
They yeah. like their maple syrup and all that up there.
Mm. And it's about as cold as well and rainy.
Yeah, there is that.
And they're pretty much right in line with Canada right there.
Mm. Yeah. But all right, next up. Representative Duncan Hutter. Now, you may remember a couple weeks ago he kind of sort of admitted that he may or may not be a war criminal.
Kind of, sort of, yeah.
Yeah, after, you know, there was that thing about... a certain war criminal from the Navy SEALs was pardoned by President Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what you may not have already known is he was already under investigation at this point for financial irregularities concerning his campaign and the money that was given to that campaign.
Yeah.
Well, this week, the prosecutors for the Department of Justice revealed that he has actually used his campaign funds for five different affairs.
Wow.
Yeah, this is the guy that vaped in the House of Reps
mm-hmm.
to protest bills outlawing vaping or whatever it was.
Yeah.
He and his wife illegally diverted $250,000 in campaign funds for personal use, including, you know, lavish vacations, children's school tuition, even all the way down to things like buying games on Steam. And their court filings on Monday spell out allegations that Hunter routinely used campaign funds to pay for Ubers, bar tabs, hotel rooms, and other expenses to fund at least five extramarital relationships. And this is a guy that threw his wife under the bus for this whole thing, because he basically said, oh, she was the campaign chair.
Yeah.
She's in charge of this. Guess what? She flipped on him. And she probably knew about at least some of these affairs. It's like, you don't give a person with that much ammo reasons to pull the trick.
Yeah.
As they say, at trial, the United States will seek to admit evidence of defendant Duncan D. Hunter, his expenditure of campaign funds to pay for a host of personal expenses, minus personal expenses or funds Hunter spent to pursue a series of intimate personal relationships. Let's see. The marital communications privilege does not protect statements made by spouses who are partners in crime. Pressing whether any of the allegations are true, Hunter repeatedly accused prosecutors of political bias. You have criminally political prosecutors in this case on a personal smear campaign. It's the most political case in the world, which that's not a good way to get favorable.
Oh, that is. That's just.
Plea offers. Let's see.
Just take your medicine. And
yeah, the Department of Justice also filed a motion to exclude any evidence of Hunter's good behavior, including his military service and other evidence that might suggest his use of campaign funds is routine among members of Congress. The filing comes shortly after Hunter's legal team asked for the case to be dismissed, alleging the prosecutors are biased against him because they supported former Democratic presidential candidates Hillary Clinton. The Justice Department asked for any claims of political bias to be excluded.
God, it does always come back to that, doesn't it? That's like their stock excuse.
Hmm.
And finally, prosecutors detail numerous instances when Hunter allegedly used campaign cash to fund his affairs. See, 2010, Hunter allegedly took a lobbyist on a quote-unquote double date, road trip to Virginia Beach with a fellow congressman, then charged his campaign for the hotel room and bar tab. See, 2015, Hunter allegedly took a House leadership aide for cocktails and then took an Uber back to his office after they spent the night together. Both expenses were charged to his campaign account. Hunter also allegedly became intimately involved with a woman who worked in his congressional office in 2015, regularly paying for the dates with campaign funds. File also says Hunter, who has developed a reputation on Capitol Hill for drinking heavily and carousing, used campaign money to pursue, quote, clearly non-work-related activity during get-togethers with his close personal friends. Our prosecutors declined to elaborate further, saying the sensitive conduct could potentially taint the jury pool. Yeah. This guy, the quote here, evidence of Hunter's negative bank balances, overdue mortgage payments, credit card debts, and other aspects of the depleted financial condition is relevant to proving his motive, intent, knowledge, and absence of mistake in spending campaign funds for personal use. Explains why he himself used campaign funds to buy everything from cigarettes to gadgets to groceries to getaways, things he wanted but cannot afford to buy with his own money. This guy needs the book thrown at him.
Yeah.
Totally does.
He needs to be getting the book thrown at him. He needs to be put in an orange jumpsuit, and then he needs to be hauled off to pound me in the ass prison. Speaking earlier about guns and triggers and stuff like that, well, how appropriate, because this week it was announced that NRA TV, you know, that crazy lunatic internet channel.
Yeah.
Where you'd see crazy people do crazy things and say crazy shit. Well, it took the gun, turned it to its temple, and pulled the trigger. Because this week, NRA TV announced it will stop broadcasting its live programming, and Dana Loesch has been shit-canned out of there.
Yep. They also blamed the advertising firm that ran the channel, Ackerman McQueen, that oversaw the television production, despite having worked for decades together.
Yep.
So, yeah, the whole thing went pretty well. Yeah.
Success. This was a triumph.
Yeah, the channel is really something. Definitely watch the Last Week Tonight segment on it.
Oh, God, because
they have
yes.
elements of, like, weird reality show stuff where they shoehorn guns into it. Like, there's some, like, Mythbuster-style show where it's like, let's reenact these famous gunfights in movies, like the bank robbery scene from Heist, from Heat.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you know, having these bags full of money trying to run down and shoot at people. And it's like, no, this doesn't work. It's like, oh, shit, really? There being, like, lots of shows about, like, aimed towards women. Like, oh, here's how to make your, put your personal touch on your gun. And paint the clip and all that sort of stuff. Like, get that fancy touch on there.
Yeah.
It's like this turned into like a, you know, shopping channel kind of thing at the same time. It's like, all right, good.
Now we're going to see what she's going to, I guess she's going to have to go back to the infomercial circuit.
I guess.
Like she did beforehand.
She was a blogger before she got into the NRA.
Yeah, she was. She was. I'm going to go on her Twitter and her Facebook account after we're done with this and see just how many people are going, But anyway, next up, there's a restaurant in Chicago. One of their employees saw that Eric Trump, the other Trump sibling, was eating there. And so they turned around and they hocked a big old loogie on him.
As you do.
Yeah, I saw
give that person a medal.
I saw the accurate description of Eric Trump as the third Trump child. and yeah, I guess what media site was the first person he called?
Fox News.
Nope.
No.
Harder than that.
Oh, Breitbart.
Yeah. as he said here, it was purely a disgusting act by somebody who clearly has emotional problems.
Mm.
Maybe because people don't like you. That's what I would say.
And it's maybe like your family has a lot of shame to it.
Yeah.
Especially for the things they've said about people in Chicago. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, maybe there's a connection here.
There's probably, I don't know, there's probably some link there that I'm missing. Just, yeah.
Yeah, and I think the person in question has been put on leave. I imagine just given a break.
Yeah.
Until the heat dies down.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably given a break and like $1,000 just slipped into his back pocket.
Maybe like, give them a raise afterwards.
Here's another nice quote from Eric. For a party that preaches tolerance, this once again demonstrates that they have very little civility. And somebody is sick enough to resort to spitting on someone just emphasizes the sickness and desperation and the fact that we're winning. No, when you get spit on, you're generally not winning.
No, that's losing, kind of.
Oh, I hate that shit so
And Trump
much.
Has been tweeting, it's like, yeah, I'm hotter than ever now. Like, wow, you are one delusional motherfucker.
I did see a good conspiracy that suggests that Eric and Donald are growing beards so that the SNL has more trouble imitating them on their, with the two guys that always do them. On their bits.
Oh, trust me, they'll.
Because they're really.
They'll find ways to work around it.
Yeah.
There's a good bit with them with the. Crap, what was the spinner? He was like giving Eric the spinner.
Hmm. Oh, right.
And he shows him that you can actually spin. And he goes, oh. Yeah. Like he's a child.
Yeah, but.
It's great stuff.
Yeah. So, next story. So you guys know that if you're an athlete for the NCAA, it's kind of bullshit because they can make all this money on you and your likeness and you can't receive a red cent of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, California has come forward and say, you know what? That's kind of bullshit. You guys should pay these guys. And, the NCAA really does not like that.
No. Oh shit. There goes our revenue.
Yeah. They're working on a proposed law. It's called the Fair Pay to Play Act that essentially gives the players the rights to their own likenesses for licensing purposes, which allow them to, you know, pursue deals, and that sort of stuff. And the NCAA is like threatening them with not allowing their teams into championships for their respective sports.
Yeah,
good luck with that.
Yeah.
Because this goes through, it's going to make their schools a lot more, interesting for people to go to.
Yeah.
For this purpose.
It's like, oh, all of a sudden, these college athletes can, you know, make money off their hard work?
Yeah.
It's like, that's just such a radical liberal
concept. Not have the schools be the ones that just take all the money.
Mm-hmm.
And get rich off of them.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so I hope that goes through. Yeah. And fuck the NCAA.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Next up, breakdancing has been provisionally approved for Summer Olympics in Paris, which means the Jabberwocky dance crew can now be Jabberwocky's Olympic athletes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this goes.
Yeah, because actually up until fairly, I think this is like the first time that dance in general has been considered a sport for the Olympics.
Yeah.
I mean, there's kind of rhythmic gymnastics as kind of dance.
Yeah, but see, technically that's, you know, gymnastics is like supposed to be technically an athletic sport. Although, if you really think about it, there's really not much difference between the two.
No, but, there isn't. No. Not the way these guys go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, I love that breakdancing is now a big thing again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's true.
Yeah, and it's an art form.
Yeah.
And a very physically taxing art form at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess the interesting thing is, like, it's called breaking in Olympic circles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to confuse all the old people, like, what's breaking?
That'll
just
be fun.
Do not, under any circumstances, watch Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo. That is actually the title of the movie.
Yeah, that is that movie exists to be a punchline and nothing else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the first break-in is actually worth watching.
Yes.
Second one,
nope.
Just stay far away from it. Mm. But anyway. Next up, Pat's happy about this one. Sony has announced that there is going to be a Final Fantasy XIV live-action TV series.
Yeah.
Which means that they're of like mind to Final Fantasy XIV as Naoki Yoshida himself. Because when asked about the ability players have to sort of opt out of the story content up to Shadowbringers and stuff, he said, yeah, it's like watching, sitting down and binging a show on Netflix. You can start from season one, but if you want to get on at the jumping on point that we just released, then you have that option as well.
Yep.
And he says he considers Shadowbringers basically the fourth season. So yeah. This fits perfectly. I'm going to be interested to see how they cast this.
Yeah. And how they're going to title it, too. Mm. Because, you know, Final Fantasy XIV is kind of a mouthful for...
Final Fantasy A Realm Reborn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Definitely can't mention Eorzea, because that will destroy people. Mm. Normal people, at least.
Yeah, this is still, like, this is basically just greenlit. There's no product, no, like, production.
Nothing's happening yet.
Yeah. So... Yeah, this is where the Wheel of Time show was 2 years ago. So you're probably not going to see this for at least another 2 years.
Yeah. All right.
But I want to see it. So.
All right. Yeah.
And we got some Netflix news. The Prom, which is a musical. I think, is that like a Broadway musical or off-Broadway?
Yeah, Broadway.
Something? Yeah. Ryan Murphy's going to be doing a Netflix adaptation of that, and yeah, the cast is looking pretty awesome here. Let's see.
Yeah, they got Meryl Streep as the star, alongside James Corden, Nicole Kidman, Ariana Grande, as well as Awkwafina, Keegan-Michael Key, and Andrew Rannells, which is some really good actors and singers. And yeah, that's going to be pretty cool, and this is like, he's only in his first year of his 5-year deal with Netflix, and like he's got this. I think they mentioned he's got some other shows: The Politicians, Ratched, and Hollywood, as well as two more shows that are two more documentaries, and another movie stage adaptation coming.
Busy guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's not even, like you said, he's not even 2 years into this 5-year contract he's got, and he's already.
And he's worked on a lot of stuff before this, Nip Tuck, Glee, American Horror Story.
Yeah.
It's Incarnations and Feud.
Yeah.
911.
And for those of you who are wondering about, like, what the overall story of this musical is, you remember back a few years ago when there was that big hubbub about that one town who did everything they could to cancel or otherwise subvert the high school prom because one of the students was a lesbian and wanted to bring her date to it? That's what this is about, basically. this. So yeah, that's going to be, interesting to see, especially with a cast like that. Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Next up. And if you haven't, by now we're in the entertainment section of the show. Yeah. Next up, One Day at a Time is returning, but it's coming back via Pop TV for season 4.
Yeah. This is going to be, pretty cool. So Pop TV, it's a fairly small network, but I guess it's owned by CBS, which also helped revive Schitt's Creek.
Yep.
After it left Netflix, so.
Mm-hmm.
They greenlit season 4, 13 episodes for next year, 2020. And, that'll be pretty great to see.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see, like, what happens to that show afterwards, but I believe I saw people mention that Pop TV lets you watch the episodes on their site for free. So no real need to have like a cable subscription or anything like that to check it out if you don't necessarily know where Pop TV is on your on your listings.
I think they do run ads though, but yeah, who cares?
That's true. That's fine.
Yeah. Next up, everybody knows there's a new Ghostbusters movie that's coming. One that's not related to that reboot that came out about a year or so ago.
Yeah, that rather unfortunate reboot.
Yeah, not because it was of the gender flipping, but because it was just bleh.
Yeah.
God, that whole debate was so goddamn stupid. Yeah. But anyway, And Paul Rudd is going to be joining the cast.
Yep. Yeah, he's going to be joined with Finn Wolfhard, mm-hmm. who you might know from Stranger Things, and McKenna Grace, who's also in Gifted. Mm. It'll be directed by Jason Reitman, son of Ivan Reitman.
Yeah.
Yep.
Directed the original Ghostbusters. So,
yeah,
going to be out 2020.
All right.
Start filming later this summer.
Yeah. What's weird about this franchise is that if you really think about it, there's only been the one good movie, and everything else to it has been very ancillary.
Yeah.
Like, there's the one good movie, and then basically after that, it was the cartoons and the comic books and the toy line. Mm-hmm. And all of that is based on just that one movie. Everything, you know, Ghostbusters 2 was a flop.
It's not a great movie.
Yeah. It was the first Ghostbusters movie was very much lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
And
it looks like they're trying to recapture that.
Yeah. Hmm. Anyway. And finally, last story of the night, we now have a trailer for the new movie of the franchise that simply refuses to die, Charlie's Angels.
Yeah.
Do we have to do this, really?
Apparently. I guess it looks a lot better than the last time they tried to make a movie out of it.
They made like three out of it last time.
What, the one that was like 15 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, the ones with like, Lucy Liu and I think Gwyneth Paltrow was one of them, or was it? Ooh. I can't remember who was who, but.
Yeah, this is being written and directed by Elizabeth Banks with Kristen Stewart, Naomi Scott, and Ella Blinska as the Angels. Also has Patrick Stewart in it for some reason.
Well, Patrick Stewart will be in anything if you ask him.
Yeah,
I mean, he was poop in a movie.
Yeah, he has a regular role on American Dad.
Hmm.
He's also in the Emoji Movie.
Yeah,
yeah, I know that's
the poop emoji. So,
yep,
he longer has the X-Men movies to worry about.
Yeah. Well, the talent is definitely there for this. So,
yeah. It's just gonna be seeing how they're gonna do this, because the Charlie's Angels formula does become really stale after a while. So you got to find ways to, you know, fancy it up a bit.
Yeah, the comments are kind of disturbing.
Of course, it is.
Those last movies were any good?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was the movie, and if that's what you were out looking for, you know, then
yeah.
Well, one of the, if you're like, one of the oh, things those about are my Hollywood angels. Is it doesn't matter if a movie was good or bad.
Matters if it made money.
Yeah, as long as it made money or a certain amount of time has passed, they will reboot it. That's just
because it's cheaper to reboot it than to come up with something new. Apparently,
yeah.
But anyway. All right, so I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks.
Yep.
And poor Phil's going to have to go and edit all of this.
Ooh, am I going to have to do some editing?
Yeah. But anyway, so I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you have a question or comment, something you just want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, you can find our particular bit of unscripted shenanigans on such places as Apple Podcasts, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator, or really just any kind of website that lets you download audio chocolate like my silky sweet voice, and you can listen to it on the reg. That was a sentence I said, and I don't regret it one bit. Also, we may be on iTunes if that thing's still alive by the time you hear this. So, for Filippo Donofo, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Logi, I have been your host with most, Brandon Perkins. Good night. 2020 cannot get here fast enough.